So, hello everyone, my name is George Kapos, and I'll be presenting you the empirical analysis of anonymity in Zcash, which is a joint work we did with Harun Yusuf, Mary Meller, and Sarah Meckeljohn, who are also from UCL. So, before diving into the details of our paper, I would like to spend a few words talking about anonymity in cryptocurrencies in general. So, as we all may know, everything started back in 2008 with Bitcoin, and which was the first cryptocurrency ever deployed, and in its white paper, it stated that it actually provides privacy by keeping public key anonymous. So instead of transacting with your own name, you transact with a public key, so everything is perfect. However, as a broad line of research showed, this didn't work out very well. In particular, there were a lot of papers that showed that the anonymity actually provided in Bitcoin is very, very low, so we can no longer rely on pseudonymity in terms of anonymity. However, after Bitcoin, there were some better approaches in terms of privacy, and Dash, for example, used CoinJoin transactions in order to provide privacy. However, CoinJoins suffer from an availability problem, so the problem of anonymity wasn't entirely solved. Another approach was Monero, which used ring signatures in terms of anonymity, but as research showed once again, it wasn't a perfect solution. So we started working with Zcash, which for starters, relies its anonymity on well-established research. So it was very encouraging to begin with. And as time passed by, it gained a lot of popularity. Its current market value is over $500 million. And its position in the total currency is 19th, which is a quite prestigious position given that there are almost 2,000 currencies out there today. It even gained the respect of people that are inflation in the area of privacy, such as Edward Snowden, who stated that, in his opinion, Zcash is the best solution out there that in terms of anonymity in cryptocurrencies. So, in a nutshell, what is Zcash? So, a user that uses Zcash can select to transact in four different ways. The most trivial way is to transact transparently, as we see in the first type of transactions, where you send a coin from a T address to another T address, as you do in any other cryptocurrency. However, the greatest contribution of Zcash was this notion of the Z address or private address, which basically hides the owner of a particular coin. So, given this new address, we have three different types of new transactions now, which is the deposits into the shielded pool. Well, shielded pool we just call the set of all the Z addresses. We have the private transactions, which are basically coins that are circulated inside the pool from a Z address to another Z address. And lastly, we have the withdrawals from the pool, where a coin is sent from a Z address to a transparent one. So, briefly, our contributions in our paper were the following. We performed a blockchain analysis on Zcash. We showed how many people used what type of transactions and what type of users these people are. Our second contribution was based on the T2T transactions that I showed earlier, and we created clusters of users using heuristics that were already implemented in Bitcoin, because, as I said, the transparent transactions are no different than transactions in Bitcoin. Our third contribution, and perhaps the most interesting one, is that we defined and implemented new heuristics that were able to de-anonymize 69.1% of the total transactions that interacted with a shielded pool and supposedly provided privacy. Our last contribution was that we implemented these heuristics in order to investigate the activity of a hacker collective named the Shadow Brokers that used Zcash. But more details about this particular implementation you can see in the paper, because I won't talk anymore in this presentation. So the first step of analyzing the blockchain is to see how many, what type of transactions are actually used in Zcash. And as we can see, this pie, vast majority of transactions are still transparent, so most people don't even take advantage of the new novelty that Zcash offers. And this is more visible in the next pie, which basically shows that 85% of the transactions are exactly the same as Bitcoin. Only 50% use actually the shielded pool, and we will see how they do that later. So we first decided to work on the transparent transactions, and as I said earlier, we just re-implemented heuristics that were defined earlier for Bitcoin. So 85% of the total transactions were the transparent one. And what we did is we clustered addresses that belonged to the same logical entity, and then we tagged those clusters. The way we did that is exploiting the techniques used for Bitcoin for of these transparent addresses. You know where a Bitcoin, where a coin comes. You know where it, what's the, its destination, and you know what value it it offers. So the results of our heuristics for transparent transactions is this table, which shows basically what type of clusters we were able to tag. Unsurprisingly, the biggest clusters are the ones with the smaller number in the cluster section are exchanges. I mean, it's no surprise that the exchanges hold the most addresses out there. However, we had two exceptions, and in particular, we had Shapeshift and Zcash for Win. Shapeshift is not an exactly an exchange. It's an inter-exchange because you change one currency for another. There's no involvement of actual money. And Zcash for Win is a Zcash client for Windows. So the second type of transaction we worked with, and to be honest, there's not much there to see, is the private ones. So first of all, as we showed in the pie as well earlier, this type of transaction are less than 1% of the total transaction. Like the most private way to use Zcash is the most is the less used. Another key point about the private transaction is that the underlying cryptography on which they rely upon, and in particular zero knowledge proofs, ZK SNARKs, is still believed to be is still secure. So one cannot just break the crypto and then anonymize every transaction out there. Something else must be done. And we didn't find any obvious de-anonymization techniques because this particular transaction doesn't reveal anything to the observer of the blockchain. As I said, the origin of each coin, the destination, and the value of each coin is remain hidden. Our only contribution in this particular type of transaction was the following graph, which showed the spending of inputs over time. Now, we don't know who spends these inputs, and we don't know the value of these inputs. However, the only thing we know is the actual number of them. And these spikes in the graph, and as we can see, there was a huge spike after January last year. These spikes may suggest that although we don't know who uses private transaction, we have a hint that it's the same people that do so. Now, the last types of transactions, and perhaps the most interesting one, are the deposits into the pool and the withdrawals from the pool that I mentioned earlier. And the first thing to notice in this direction is, okay, who is using the pool? What type of users they are? The first category and the most dominant category in Zcash is the actual miners of the cryptocurrency. They come in two flavors. There are the independent one, the users that use their own equipment in order to mine, and there are the mining pools, which are basically services that have designated hardware for mining, and they collect a lot of miners that work for them. The way these miners get paid is by taking 10 Zcash from each block mined, and they can be trivially identified as the recipients of these rewards. As I mentioned earlier, a type of the transparent transaction is the coin generation transaction, the transaction that is the first one in each block, which basically gives the reward to the miners. So we had a set of trivially identifiable transactions belonging to miners. The second category of users are the founders of Zcash. They still take 2.5 Zcash from each block mined, which is equivalent to 20% of the total block mined reward. And their addresses are publicly known, which meant that for founders as well, we already have a trivially identifiable set of addresses. And the last category of users are others, are basically individual users who do not mine, who did not found Zcash, exchanges, wallets, etc. So the first graph to for deposits and withdrawals from the pool is the following, that shows in each block how many money is deposited and withdrawn from the pool. And perhaps the first thing to notice here is the almost perfect symmetry of this graph. So in each block, or in each very small interval of blocks, the money put into the pool and withdrawn from the pool is almost the same, which suggests that perhaps the pool is used just as a pass-through mechanism. Money is being put into the pool and almost immediately is withdrawn. So besides the symmetry, we can also see some interesting spikes, which we manually investigated, and you can find the details on the paper. So in terms of only deposits into the shielded pool, we used the trivially identifiable addresses that I mentioned earlier about miners and founders in order to see who is depositing money into the pool, when, etc. The first thing to notice in this graph is that almost 80% of the total deposits into the pool come from miners, which is quite unsurprising because, as I said earlier, 80% was the actual percentage of their block that they earned. Founders, although they're not dominant, they're the not dominant category of deposits into the pool, create some fluctuations that I hope are visible in the curve of all, which suggests that although in total they don't put as much money as the miners do, when they do it, they put bigger values. So these steps are visible in the total curve. On the other hand, when we try to use these trivial addresses in order to identify withdrawals from the pool, we saw that almost 90% of the withdrawals were unidentifiable, so we didn't know who took this money. So, in particular for founders, this curve is zero. No founder using his publicly known address has ever withdrawn money from the pool. So we understood that there's a need for heuristics that would tag addresses in a non-trivial manner. In order to do so, we first decided to work with to analyzing founders' behavior in order to implement those heuristics I mentioned. And what we noticed is that founders almost always deposited a very particular amount into the pool, and this amount was 249.999 Zcash. So the first thing we did was, okay, we know when the founders deposit money, we know how much money they deposit, let's see this particular value in the withdrawal side. However, we noticed that there were zero withdrawals of this particular value. And as I mentioned earlier, they never withdrew money using their own addresses. So we had, in the first glance, it was impossible to see when founders withdraw money from the pool. However, taking a very close look at the blockchain, we identified a lot of the withdrawals that were of value 250.001, which is extremely close to the value I mentioned earlier. And what's more, the timing of these particular withdrawals was very much correlated with the deposits of the founders I mentioned earlier. In particular, these withdrawals occurred around 6 to 8 blocks after the deposits happened. As I said earlier, the addresses were not the same, but the value was extremely close, and the timing correlation very much matched. So this correlation led us to the heuristic that identified founders, that was the following. Any withdrawal from the pool that was carrying this particular value has been done by the founders. In order to argue about the false positive of this heuristic, I would like to mention that the deposits into the pool that were around 250 Zcash and did not happen by the founders were only 5, whereas the ones that happened from the founders were almost 2,000. These are the results of our heuristics. So we see that the curve for the founders' withdrawal that initially was zero increased, and it was almost the same amount that it was deposited. We lost a very small percentage. And we were able to flag almost 2,000 transactions as being related to founders' withdrawals. The second behavior we analyzed was the one from mining pools. So we decided to investigate mining pools behavior rather than individual miners because they are the dominant category of miners. So we investigated more than 15 different pools, but two were by far the most dominant ones, Flypool and F2 pool. So although the total money they ever deposit into the pool is pretty close, their behavior is very different. So as you can see, Flypool worked with in a much more consistent way, whereas F2 pool was more random. So what's more interesting than the actual wealth of these pools is how they operate, and it's the following. The mining pool, each mining pool address has a public address that's known to everyone. So what they do was receive all the rewards of the blocks they mined. They accumulate their value, and when they reach up to a certain point, they do only one deposit into the pool, and then they withdraw the money from the pool in a very specific way. In particular, they send a very small percentage to their own mining pool address, which is basically the money the company keeps for themselves, And the rest of the value is being distributed to hundreds and thousands of unidentifiable addresses, which we believe are basically the miners that work for them and are being paid for their service. So this very unique behavior led us to our second heuristic, which was relating to identifying miners, that stated the following. Whenever a withdrawal happens from the pool that has over 100 output addresses, and one of those is a known mining pool address, we flag this transaction as being related to miners' activity, and we flag all of the recipient addresses as being as belonging to miners. In order to argue about this, about the false positive of these heuristics, we mentioned that the inclusion of an actual mining pool address in the output addresses makes it unlikely to be a transaction that are not related to miners. That's not related to miners. The results of our heuristics are the following. We were able to identify almost 120,000 new addresses as belonging to miners, and we were able to capture a very big percentage of the miners' pool activity. However, we weren't able to capture fly pool activity because it didn't follow the behavior I told you earlier, but other people did, and you can see the results in the paper aside here. Our last heuristic didn't focus on miners or founders of Zcash, but rather tried to be more generic and capture general transaction interacting with the pool. So this particular heuristic states the following. Whenever you have a deposit into the pool that is of a unique value, and when I say unique, I mean it's the only deposit into the pool of this particular value, and you find the same thing in the withdrawal side, so you find unique withdrawals of that are unique across the blockchain, and these two values match, and the withdrawal happens a couple of blocks after the deposit, we correlate these two transactions, and we say, okay, this withdrawal is the equivalent to this deposit, so the endpoint addresses are being related to each other, belong to the same entity. So our last heuristic is identifying others, and I more formally put it here. And in order to argue about the false positives of this heuristic, I would like to mention the following. Almost 99% of these unique values I mentioned had at least 3 decimal points. So although you can't put a certain mathematical formula that will say what's the probability of randomly finding unique deposits and withdrawals that are not matched to each other, but a private transaction happening between that led to this split, is small. This heuristic had already been implemented prior to our work by the paper I cite here. So what are the key points to keep from this talk? First of all, the usage of the pool is very limited. So the novelty of Zcash that provides actual anonymity is very low. Not many people use it. So perhaps there should be incentives for people to use it and some more things. In particular, before our work, a lot of wallets didn't even support shielded transactions. So that was a problem of the reason for the low usage. One other key point is that the people that actually use the pool, do it in a bad way, and in a way that it can be de-anonymized with our work. As we said, 69.1 of the transactions that actually interacted with the pool were de-anonymized. The last key point is that the underlying crypto in which Zcash is relied upon is still perfectly secure. So Zcash has the potential to provide much better anonymity than it provides today. So thank you very much for listening, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
It
would definitely be beneficial for anonymity to have a much bigger anonymity set. The most transactions that are put money into the pool means that you have a bigger anonymity set of coins to be spent. So in a hypothetical scenario where only shielded transactions were operated, the anonymity, according to our heuristics, would be perfect. Some other heuristics may be implemented in the future, but according to our heuristics, if every transaction was private, none of this would be possible.
My name is Daniel. Just to see that I understood that right, you can link the incoming money to the outgoing money, but you don't know if they're the same person. Because if I pay you for services rendered, then I put money in, but I take it out and I send it to you. That means we were not the same person, right?
Exactly. So there are two possibilities, as you mentioned. The first one is if you want to use the pool in order to hide basically your coins. So you put money into the pool and you withdraw it. But when you withdraw it, if you do it in a good way, you'll hide the origin. So no one will know that I possess the same coin that I deposited. However, the pool can be used, as you said, as a payment method. So you put money into the pool and you inform the party you want to give money to that, okay, this Z address is the one you should take money from. So it can be possible, yeah.
Are there any interpool transfers to make the observation more difficult?
Excuse me, can you repeat that, please?
Are there any transactions from one pool to one of the other pools, so it's harder to follow?
But there's only one pool. The pool is unique. The pool is just the set of all the Z addresses. So okay. when you put money into the pool, you have, let's say, one particular coin that belongs to one particular T address. What you can do is send money to two different Z addresses. So basically, split your coin. So if you split the coin, it's very effective for our heuristics, because then the value that will be withdrawn from it, it's not the same as the one that is deposited.
Thanks.
And one last question for you.
Yes, sir.
So did you confirm with any of the founders that those were indeed their transactions?
We got some private confirmation that our heuristics were, in general, didn't have a huge problem. So.
All right. If there are no more questions, let's thank George.
Thank you.